All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the HTI2 Proposed Rule Task Force Group 1 meeting. I'm Seth Pazinski with the HHS Assistant Secretary for Technology Policy, and I'll be serving as your designated federal officer today. As a reminder, this meeting is open to the public, and public feedback is welcome throughout the meeting. Comments can be made via the Zoom chat feature, and also there will be time for verbal public comments towards the end of our agenda today. And we're going to get started with a roll call. So when I call your name, if you can please indicate that you are present. And I'm going to start with our co-chair, Bryant Thomas-Karras.
Present.
All right. Thank you. Shyla Blinn.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hans Bootendijk. I see Hans on.
Can't hear you, Hans.
Yeah, we can't hear you.
It should work now. Can you hear me?
Yes, that's great. Thanks, Hans.
Good morning.
Good morning. Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Good morning. Lee Fleischer. Raj Gudbarti.
Present.
Thank you. Jillian Haney.
Present.
Thank you. Joel Hartzell.
Present.
Thank you. Steve Hester. Aaron Holt Coyne.
Good morning.
Good morning. Jim Jurgis. Mary Beth Carrillo.
Good morning.
Good morning. Kiki Loma Ashukintan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Zanet Sumar King. And I did get a message that Naresh Sundar Rajan will not be able to join us today. And we have Thomas Wilkinson.
Hey, good morning. I'm here.
All right. Thank you. Is there anyone I missed or who just joined us that would like to announce themselves? Okay. Then I will turn it over to our co-chair, Bryant Thomas-Karras, to get us started.
All right. So everybody hold on to your hats. This is going to be a fast one today. We've got a ton to get through, and I'm hoping, although in a quick scan, there were still some people who hadn't finished their homework assignments. So I'm hoping kept them in another document and you'll be able to drop them in when we get to your section of the spreadsheet. We're hoping to go through and, you know, approve as a group final text that'll get transmitted forward to and that the staff can assemble into a document that'll get reviewed in the 3 days of next week. We really have to, and they'll need time to assemble all that. So we really need to get this finalized today. Without further ado, I think we should jump right into it because I want to have every moment of time to get through the document. I'll caution everybody, we may need to avoid wordsmithing and just make sure that we have the meat of the comments or what we or our recommendations for each of these, with the exception, the details that do matter are when we reference specific IGs or specific releases of HL7 guides. We want to make sure that we get that right. All right, so let's jump into how did we want to do this, Seth? Are we operating from the spreadsheet, I believe? And Maggie, are you driving or who's going to be doing the...
I'll have the spreadsheet. This is Aaliyah.
Hey, Aaliyah. Thank you so much.
Of course.
And apologies in advance. It's going to be a lot of jumping around, I'm imagining. But let's... Or sliding back and forth. All right. And is it possible to use your entire screen, spread the spreadsheet out further to the side? Excellent. It's getting better. I've still got black space on either side of the spreadsheet. I don't know if that's accessible to your... Is that just because of the shape of my screen?
That might be your screen, Brian. Mine's edge to edge.
Okay. Okay. Let's go with this then. All right.
And real fast, as a reminder for folks, up at the top of the screen, you can zoom in and make it larger by going up to the your viewing, and there's a zoom ratio button to make it bigger if you need to on your own screen.
For aging eyes, it can be very advantageous. All right. Let's, Mary Beth, F1 is up first. How are you doing on distilling all of the comments into a succinct recommendation?
We think fairly well. We added in all the comments into column J, and I know folks have gone in and edited those slightly, so I'd be happy to walk through those, Brian, if that would be helpful.
Great. And do we have, if we scroll over, so column J is where the finals were going to go. Good. Okay. So the next column, yep. K, it's just blank. Perfect. Just wanted to confirm there wasn't anything hiding over there. So if you can hone in, which paragraph should we be focusing on?
Yeah, so I think if we shift over to column J and just zoom in on that one, I think that column G is mainly, I think,
discussion,
just conversational, but column J is where our draft text, our main okay. comments are. Yep. Yeah. So I think some of them are really straightforward and some of them may require some discussion. So just to start at the top, we recommend the F1 criteria focus on the 2018 update to the 251 implementation guide, as the implementation guide under development will likely not be published until late 2025, early 2026. So that's really in response to a question that ASTP had about where should they focus in on the final rule.
Yeah.
So we did meet with our CDC colleagues and they did confirm that it will likely go to ballot at likely the September 2025 meeting, and then comments will need to be resolved. So it's likely to be early 2026 before that one's on the street.
Okay. And we're, and it's not, it's implicit that the community era is still in favor of sticking with the 251 standard, and not, because by that time, you know, early 2026, one could imagine that a fire IG could be ready as well. Is that on the horizon or not even in discussion?
Probably not to replace submission and query. I think we're having a lot of conversations about a bulk fire query IG for the immunization community, but unlikely to have one to replace submission and query for V2.
All right, good. So let's change that first paragraph to green. All right, next, Mary Beth.
Okay, so this is really about terminology. So we recommend the term bidirectional be replaced and that the actors in each use, and we had put senders and responders, Hans made the modification to say providers and immunization registries be better identified in each individual requirement. Specifically, we propose replacing the term bidirectional exchange with immunization registries, submission and or query. The F1 section is highlighting the certification expectations for certified EHR technology, so it's helpful to center them as the actor in this portion. So that's really about making sure we're being clear, or that the rule is being clear in who they're referring to when they talk about who is submitting and who's responding to a query. And I'll just mention that we support Hans's recommendation to, rather than say sender and responder, to say provider and immunization registry, since that's really who we're referring to in this section.
Okay. And that is, an immunization registry is a consistent term across all 57 jurisdictions.
Yeah, and I think that is worth a brief conversation. The rule uses immunization registry and immunization information system interchangeably. I think they're both referenced throughout the document. I think as a community, we lean in a little bit more to the term immunization information system because we feel like it's more representative of the broader functionality of our systems. But would love to hear the group's thoughts about that. And I see that Hans has his hand up as well.
Okay. Well, and I'll turn to Hans in a second, but last clarification is, I wonder if we should put PHA's immunization registry just to differentiate, because some EHRs or some health systems may operate a registry internally. Just clarifying that we're talking about the gold standard jurisdictional registry.
This is Steve Shannon, real fast. I'm not sure it makes a difference. I mean, if a private registry wants to use the standard, I don't think there's anything prohibiting them.
Okay. And there are several local health jurisdictions that operate immunization registries even within a state, like New York City, for example. So, all right. We'll stay neutral on that. Hans.
Yes, thank you. Quick clarification that the intent of my comment was, and I'm not sure whether it came clear, but if we go at some point in time back to row two, it might be more clear as a general comment that F1 would be renamed to immunization-provider, if you will, and that F21 would be renamed to be immunization registry or PHA immunization registry. It's not that F1 would be renamed to provider and immunization registry.
Got it. Yeah, no doubt. Thank you for that clarification.
Thanks for clarifying.
I think that was the intent. As I'm rereading it again, it might not totally come across. If at some point in time you go back to F.
We didn't parse your sentence correctly, Hans.
But I didn't write it totally correctly and fully either. So we're in sync.
And technically, it's actually more than providers because if something like a school is using the same interface to pull data to validate a student's immunization status, they may or may not be acting as a provider per se.
Provider, care site.
Just another way to indicate that you are the provider of you performing the immunization, because that's really, I think, what we're focusing at. If the school does the...
The school may be entering in historic...
Right.
Well, that would still make them a provider. But if they're just querying the registry or the vaccination status to validate that the student has vaccines to go in, they're not a healthcare provider at all at that point. They're a requester.
But then
they're a user.
It might become a different role that says that role you're really focusing on the query ability.
Absolutely.
And thinking of ONC's authority, I don't think ONC is going to have authority over school-based systems like they would over EHR systems. So.
No, but it's looking at the user. It's not. It's worrying a little bit too much about the wordsmithing here. But there are other entities other than the providers that are likely to use the query function.
At that point in time, I would be more inclined. Create a new criterion for just the query capability if there is interest in certifying that. Because here we're trying to say is that you need to support as part of this both the submission and the query ability. That's what the provider's system is supposed to be capable of, not one or the other.
All right, can we scroll over just to move things along? Can we scroll over to the title column? I think it's A or B. So Hans, what you're saying is that the change name to immunization registries bidirectional we really are wanting that to be change name to immunization registries provider.
Yeah, or it could be called the immunization registry submission and query dash provider. And then for F21, it is the immunization registry receipt and responding to queries. Or maybe we want to keep it shorter, but it is, we're looking at whatever the IAS is supposed to do on their side, receiving and responding to queries.
And do we need the word provider there at all? Because if you left it off, then it doesn't matter if you're a provider or not. You're focused on the function.
All right.
And I agree with you in the big scope, Hans. It probably should be broken out into sending and receiving as two separate components because, again, particularly when you look at specialized EHRs, if a provider is never giving an immunization, but they may be querying for immunization status, they don't need the function of submission, so why should they necessarily have to pay for it?
So can we turn this next paragraph green, or do we need to wordsmith it a little bit more, Mary Beth, and come back to it?
No, I think that I feel like the outstanding questions are just making sure that we're identifying the actors correctly, and then also coming back to that immunization registry versus immunization information system. And I do see a comment from Noah Martz in the chat that immunization registry does feel like a step backwards, because I think we really socialized the IIS term as representative of broader functionality. So how about I do some final wordsmithing on this following the meeting, and then folks can go in and take a look.
All right. So we'll hold off on I think the discussion that's there around replacing bidirectional with actors in the body of the text seems clear, with the exception of immunization registry versus IIS, or maybe you do both. What I'm looking for is, do we need a specific paragraph or a replacement text for what the title change should be?
This is Steve real fast. I think we're better off, rather than labeling provider, if we look at labeling system type, it's better off whether it's IIS or whether it's, you know, EHR system or whatever you want to call it, in that sense, rather than the user, because there may be a bunch of different users of the different technologies. And we're not really, what's being certified here is the technology, not the user.
Fair point on the last, other than that the provider, the role is the thing that the HIT doing that, whether it's an EHR or whether it's if we are splitting it up in a variety of different roles, a school system or a specialty EHR or a all-purpose whatever.
Yep.
The variety of HIT is so much that we cannot use HIT, and EHR is not always applicable, but it is the HIT in support of the provider to enable immunization capabilities.
Right, or the user, actually.
Yeah. So.
All right, let's... we're over time for discussion on this one. We'll have to come back to see, Mary Beth, what you've crafted so we can turn it
sure.
green. Some of the other points that we didn't get to, it sounds like that you found inconsistency of 2028 versus 27.
Right, we did.
I'm assuming you want 28.
Well, before we get to the date discrepancy, Brian, I'm wondering if we can just briefly discuss the, I guess it's the third recommendation down on the potential removal of the requirement for EHRs to develop functionality to support QBP RSP as a receiver of the query message. I think both Hans and I put in a recommendation to consider removal there, given that we really call out the need for Firebase query in G10 and G20. So it seems like it may make sense to not ask EHRs to build in a V2 capability to respond to queries, but I would love to see if we have the group support of that.
As long as did you field that to your membership as well?
We did. We discussed it briefly, and we're going to be discussing it again at the start of September. But our community is supportive of that.
I imagine the community, but maybe more importantly, the vendor community would have their hands full either way, but it makes a lot more sense to be building towards something that's going to last longer.
Well, the thing is that immunizations are already in G10. So then G20 may be adding, I don't have the exact data elements, so that G20 adds to immunizations. But that seems the more logical path for queries. Otherwise, we're building a new capability that EHRs otherwise have no need for, that there's a question about who's going to use it on a V2 environment, which means is that it's one thing to go to a limited number of IASs. It's another thing to go to a thousands upon thousands of provider systems with V2 queries. That's just not scalable. So that's why from an EHR perspective on that side, implementing being able to respond to V2-based queries is going to have very limited opportunity versus FHIR-based access to immunization data is going to have a much easier to scale approach. That's why we are not.
And by that time, we may have bulk. So, all right.
Well, bulk is a different,
different topic, I know, but maybe it'll supersede the need. I'm really worried now. We're well over time. Let's get on to the next one, and we'll come back and hopefully have some green text to approve. Okay, scroll down to F2, please. All right. So Ike and Jillian, you were on deck to turn some things green or get ready to turn some things green. Do you want to walk us through your recommendations? And looks like Hans had some friendly amendments.
After you, Jillian.
I'm going to be really honest here. I have not been in the office, so I have not had ample opportunity to spend as much time as I would really like on this. I think, you know, Steve's comments around the actual standard is appropriate, and would agree with that. I think the thing that might require some conversation is in response to Hans' comment around alignment with case reporting. And I just wanted to state that, you know, syndromic surveillance data and electronic case reporting data serve two extremely different purposes. And I would not make that recommendation. Steve, I don't know if you want to add,
I would agree very much with that, as well as Aaron's comments looking at there's not really a FHIR guide to shift to at this point. Public health does sometimes link, especially where syndromic surveillance data may have personal identifiers, some jurisdictions collect that. They may link that with subsequent data, but as a general course, as Julian says, there are much different purposes for collecting syndromic surveillance data and ECR data. If we delayed collecting the data we're getting from syndromic surveillance to ECRs, we would not be able to take advantage of the timeliness of the data that's coming in for most syndromic surveillance data. Looking at the dates, January 1st, 2027 is a Friday. One of the things we need to be cognizant of, and we elaborated on that a little bit, is things like the CDC reporting week ends on Thursday. So we want to make sure that that's aligned. We did provide a little bit of an explanation as to why because otherwise we're running into some challenges about, you know, why pick January 1st for a transition versus December 31st as being the last date. It seems a little weird, quite frankly, across the board to have the expiry date be the first, you know, across the board for any of these pieces.
Yeah. Midnight, or 11:59 on the 31st, as opposed to.
I may be able to help to shortcut this part. Okay. On the future section, A was meant to be in the future, not for the current HDI2. That would be impossible. I have no problems that this is not included in the recommendation in a futures consideration. That can be addressed later. But I do want to clarify that the proposal is not that syndromic surveillance is replaced by case reporting. Understand that that's not that cannot work. Rather, that the format and the technique that is used and the use of FHIR use it for the transmission of syndromic surveillance will be extremely helpful because ADT messages in V2 are just not well suited to continue to expand it with clinical data. FHIR is much better suited for it than whatever the trigger events are, unique and specific to syndromic surveillance, the content is. So it's an analogy to it is not a replacement by. But I'm okay with being removed.
And Hans, just clarifying, you're not saying that syndromic surveillance messages are ADT messages, but the format is similar to ADT messages, but the syndromic surveillance is its own its own HL7 IG.
It is. It's using ADT messages from HL7 V2, and that format has
not, worked. But not explicitly, because an ADT messages has identifiable information in a syndromic.
Well, from an HL7 perspective, it is an ADT message without identifiable information. And an ADT message structurally, whether you have identifiable data in it or not, is not as conducive to the increased amount of clinical data to do that. So that's why we are suggesting that an approach akin to, analogous to, but not shifting to a case reporting FHIR-based, a collection of data that is triggered based on appropriate events for syndromic surveillance. But now,
we've had this discussion before, Hans, and I think we'll have to take this offline.
That's what I'm saying.
There is no a trigger event in syndromic. The event is everything.
That's why I'm okay to remove it here. We can discuss that later. There's a lot of analogy there from a technical implementation perspective. We have some terminology alignment to do.
Yeah. All right. Jillian, your hand came up.
No, you just said what I was going to say. Everything, not triggers.
Yeah. Okay. So are there, so with Hans' withdrawal of his comment at the, it's the last paragraph, the fourth one, I presume, Hans. But are we okay with turning the second and third paragraph there green?
The other piece we didn't discuss is that we're concerned about the time frame for implementation, that January 1st, 2027 really means you'd have to have it released into usage something like September 1st, 2026. If we're going to do any testing and actually have it deployed.
That seems like a reasonable comment to make. It's a quarter ahead minimum. Still for a large state, that's still a lot of transition to make. So hopefully some providers will be ready much sooner than that.
Right, but you also have to modify the state system to receive the data.
Yeah.
And just from a procurement standpoint, unless modifying the system was already part of a purchase order or something today, you might be very hard pressed to get the technology modified by September 1st, let alone January 1st. If you had to do a new procurement.
All right. Do we want to recommend 2028 like we've done with others? Although this is still a V2, so it doesn't seem like it's as much of a transition that's necessary. So stick with the 2027 or December 31st, 2026.
Brian, this is Erin. I was just going to comment that from what I gathered from our syndromic folks in Tennessee is that the implementation guide that's referenced really isn't adding much new. It's just attempting to clarify existing guidance. So this likely won't be considered like an entirely new interface or switching standards.
Okay.
Might be helping with clarity around conformance and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And is the now I'm having trouble finding my notes. Didn't the program area at CDC tell us that there was a release 1.1 instead of release 1? Or am I mixing up syndromic and...
I'll look it up real quick.
I'll look it up. Or go ahead. Erin, let's both look it up. We'll find it faster.
So Steve and Jillian, are you comfortable? Give me a yes, no on what, or tell us what we can turn green. So we can move on.
Timing, yes, turn green. Second one. First.
Oh, your audio broke up for me.
Sorry. First paragraph goes green.
All right. And do you still, are people comfortable with Steve's suggestion on the availability in September so that the cutover can be at New Year's?
I'm fine with that.
All right, let's turn that one green too. Any opposed? All right. And thanks for Hans. Thanks for your clarification. And I'm sure you and I will be having discussions about that in the next rulemaking. All right. Let's move on to F3. And we're going to have to make up some time because we're sliding. We should be about two or three more along the way. Hans, is this you're the lead on?
I started and then Erin provided a comment and I wanted to make sure Erin was there and she put a couple of additions in the... Right. Once as well. So I think we can cover that. And Erin, just jump in if I miss something.
And I put some new comments over in column G, but I think hopefully they're covered.
Yeah, after yesterday morning, yeah, I bought them.
There are just some concerns on the timing, but I think... let's jump over to your text first.
You want me to paraphrase them, and then we...
Well, are these iterations or are all of them?
All of them.
All of them.
Yeah, they were separated into the different aspects, and so there was clear recommendation on each aspect.
All right, let's start at the top and turn them green after you've
okay, so the first one is where we discussed that this particular criterion, F3, should focus on the reporting aspects, and that any references to ordering relevant lab tests for public health would better be done in A2. That's the essence of it. So it's not a removal from HDI2 of lab orders, but it's to address it in the context of A2.
Okay.
Yeah, so the way this reads right now, it's a bit confusing because it's referencing orders and results, and it kind of suggested that public health would be receiving orders, but we need the orders to convey the necessary information to the labs so they can support the communications to public health. We don't necessarily need to receive orders as a reporting mechanism. We would get a case report that might have order information, or we would receive the actual lab result itself.
And if we were to look at A2, that's where then more clarity is provided on, you have lab orders, depending on which lab it goes to, commercial lab, public health lab, a performing lab on behalf of another lab, there are variations in how much of the proposed LOI would be necessary to make that work so that the reporting lab at that point in time has adequate information to do the reporting to public health.
All right, so we'll re-reference that when we get to A2, but let's turn that first paragraph green. Second paragraph.
Since there are a couple of aspects that there are dates for the provider side, but not for public health, the intent here is to identify that once such dates are set, that there's adequate time for both parties to then achieve those dates and be ready. So some of them are already in provider side because of the nature of renewal of certification. But we hope to achieve is that everybody is aligned and things are developed in a timely fashion that are then being used.
Yeah, that kind of lines up with my comments that, you know, given 100 different laboratories in an average size state, 2028 seems ambitious. Sufficient time is going to be necessary on both sides. Do we want to put a line in the sand of what a realistic time is, like 2029, 2030, or leave that up to ASTP?
No idea what the good time would be. So perhaps
Brett.
Aaron, go ahead.
Sorry, no, I didn't mean to interrupt Tom. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
My public health colleagues might shoot me for this, but I think I would prefer to keep it at 2028. I mean, this is going to be our opportunity to clean some things up and to standardize. And so if we keep kicking that can down the road, by the time 2029 and 30 comes around, we will have missed out on an opportunity to clean up what we're already getting and then probably faced with a new standard entirely.
Yeah, whatever replaces FHIR will be available by then. Okay. We won't shoot you. We are nonviolent, so we'll just hug you really aggressively. I think so realistic time frame. Could still include 2028.
Yeah, from our perspective, it could. It's just making sure that they are reasonably aligned. Otherwise, we have a risk of developing something that's not going to be used yet, or we have something else that happens first, and then we are not ready because it's not late. So we just want to have everybody synced.
Okay, so let's turn that green.
Next one is just to point to the one, latest one that is updated. Aaron put in the actual name, full name in there.
Perfect. And this is, so what's, I think Aaron, we need to have that, this comment circulated amongst as many jurisdictions as we can, as well as HL7 and JFIT and whoever else is going to be commenting, because it's going to be a challenge for ONC to justify including an IG that wasn't in the notice of proposed rulemaking unless they get an overwhelmingly large number of commenters all triangulating in on the same standard. So we'll need to make sure that people know the importance of referencing this exact IG.
I can take that to JFIT.
Thank you, Jillian.
And we can highlight it on our calls too.
Yeah, I was about to say, can also get it in Connect.
Yeah. So, and it, so it's edition it, 5 but... is not specifically mentioned in this NPRM. It's pointing at edition
4.
All right, so let's try to get that corrected. Otherwise, we'll be stuck with the dead letter, as they say.
And the next paragraph goes hand in hand. The first red paragraph is about the IG itself. The second paragraph is about the specific public health profile component that should be used.
Also mentioned. So
those two go hand in hand.
Yep. Why don't we eliminate the space between those two so that they stay together? And then turn them both green.
So just put an end between them and
semicolon or something.
And a little wordsmithing on the second paragraph. We're not going to do that now, but a little wordsmithing, because right now it looks like a double negative. So make sure we avoid that.
Not reference. Okay.
Yep. That makes sense.
Okay. Not only, okay. Yeah. It's a weird, almost double negative.
Exactly. Again, we don't need to wordsmith it now if you want to tag it. I would just tag it.
So if staff can make sure that it isn't interpreted as an or a, but it's a clarification. All right, next, Hans or Jillian.
Very straightforward. Next one. The discussion was around having all the relevant data. Some discussion around data might be in different systems, but indicating here is that the party that pulls the report either needs to have it or needs to have the ability to have that information so that it can be a complete report by the center.
And Aaron, you're comfortable? You've got the right additions in there. We can delete out the Aaron added in the final text, unless you want to be in the final rule, Aaron.
Yeah, remove the Aaron added.
Brian, tag that paragraph. I can take a quick look at it afterwards because there are a couple of other places we've got similar language about a criterion needing to pull data from other places.
Yeah.
Not trying to wordsmith here, But if you tag me on it, I'll try to synchronize that data between the different places that it occurs in the write-up.
Okay. Yeah, it's, we have to be careful we don't get micromanaging. We want to, you know, the functional endpoint, but we, I guess what you're saying, Steve, is that we don't, EHR systems can't use as an excuse that the data is someplace else. We want them to actually jump through the hoops of pulling it from another system.
Well, it's more along the lines of the test certification needs to demonstrate that it's got the full, that it's generating the full message. If it's coming out of the EHR, fine, but if it needs to pull it, if it needs to pull from somewhere else, that's got to be part of the certification criterion too.
Yeah, I think
regardless of whether or not it's the other system is certified.
Yeah, so that we're gonna run up against the dilemma of modular certification. We can't, unless we do after implementation testing, a real world testing, that's not possible. Aaron, you put your hand up.
I mean, if the expectation is that there is that whoever the actor is to conform to the specific implementation guide that is referenced, it seems like it would be, and this might be naive, but their responsibility if the information is known to make it available to the interface.
Exactly.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just that the F, what are we on, F4? Are we only at F3? Oh, geez. Okay. F3 is targeting the EHR provider, not the actual actor. So.
Right. And from a certification criterion, if it's coming out of the EHR, fine. Pass certification criterion. If it's not in the EHR needs the capability to get it from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And either one works, and that gets you to that certification criterion, okay. Right?
And then we need to recognize is that it's capable of doing it. It can have all the data in there. The fact whether it was actually configured in combination with other systems goes beyond certification of the.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
We need to recognize that. And as long as that's there, that's.
Yeah,
it's the capability, not the actual doing it all the way through from the start.
Right, because that's where we have less control of what's done there.
Right, because you don't want to, it would be bad to have something certified as capable of sending it, but it doesn't have the data to send. And then the provider says, I can't get the data into my system.
All right, you guys, we're halfway through and we've done less than a quarter of the topic. So I'm not sure what are there any more we can turn green right here and move on?
Is the one that we just talked about ready for green? Sounded like that we're on the same page. Give some everything.
Yeah, I think it's green, but with just synchronizing the text, because we do the same thing in three other places in other criterion. So I was going to get
right,
all that text aligned.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Next paragraph. Again, have some Aaron suggestions. We'll have to. Okay, go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, I was basically just suggesting a rewrite of the laboratory required to report to public health sentence. The original, the way it ended, it says needs while the ordering provider only needs to report to public health, but should not be required to receive laboratory orders, just in an attempt to clarify that a bit, I said the laboratory required to report to public health must have the ability to receive laboratory orders that include data relevant to public health and report to public health, while the ordering provider only needs to report to public health a case report and should not be responsible for also reporting lab orders separate from the case report.
And okay, that makes sense. I'm thinking in our jurisdiction, the laws may not fully align. I think we still have just lab reporting, not case reporting on the as legal requirements.
You don't have provider reporting?
Well, it's provider reporting of positive lab results.
Right, but you're not necessarily going to, you would case expect the provider to pick up the phone.
Yeah. Well, not we can say both. Right? We say the provider has to call us, the lab has to call us, everybody has to call us, but the provider never does.
Considering the argument against public health reporting and the burden that causes, I think if we were to now require that providers also report and labs also report laboratory orders,
I agree with you.
Shoot ourselves in the foot.
No, I totally agree with you. I'm just trying to think about all the rule changes we have to do locally, and I'll shut up now. But what's delete out the Aaron suggested edit from the middle of that paragraph, and is that last sentence a replacement, Aaron, or an additional clarification?
It was a replacement of the laboratory. So the very second sentence, the laboratory required report, it was a replacement of that sentence.
Okay, which goes all the way to providers?
Yes.
Okay.
And can I ask, I have no problems with that adjustment on that sentence, but I realized reading that is that the responsibility, going back to our role-based focused criteria, that the responsibility of the lab required to report has the ability to receive that. We may want to indicate that is best done in a separate criteria, F whatever, that is for lab reporting laboratory, that they have the ability to receive that information. So the ordering provider can put it on the order. The lab needs to have the ability to receive it. So part of this is to be addressed in F3, and part of it is to actually then further be addressed in some new criterion that is focused on the lab.
I concur with Hans.
Yeah. However, that phrase, but I realize is that we cannot totally catch that in the phrasing.
Yeah, we need a LIMS F criteria, or maybe it's an L criteria or something.
Well, we still have F30 through 40.
Or
then F33, something like that.
Also, we can have it also end in a 3. I get you.
Yep.
Okay. So let's turn that green. Thank you for the cutting and pasting surgical execution there. And then, Aaron, is this last also a clarification?
Nope, you just leave it red. I would just stick with the green that you have.
Perfect. Let's move on to F4. Cancer. Okay, and
after you, Hans.
So I started, I added, so we get to both. The key there is that not to require the use of Firebase implementation guide for cancer registries, rather focus on the efforts to adopt CDA-based reporting. I think that's where the comment then would go into. We support the CDA version, and we are not in disagreement with the FHIR. The focus should be on enabling a CDA in that regard. So we don't want to have a required shift to FHIR at this point in time. So that's the essence of that comment. So there's optionality, but enable adoption. Otherwise, folks are midstream shifting over required to FHIR. That seems too soon.
And how do we feel about the American Association of Cancer Registries format or guidance, which still seems to be a little bit left out of the certification criterion? Because their guidance is current as of like January 2024. So it's not old, it's version 5.1.
No concern with the versions that are being listed, but more the concern is that one would have to be done while the other one sounds like that is already being removed.
Wait, clarify that again. So the STU1 1.0.0 is not the most current, right? Aaron, you've got your hand up. Is that a HL7 specific version correction? I hope.
I believe there is a cancer pathology IG and FHIR. I will confirm that. What I think is referenced. My comment here was going to be distinguishing between, in the recommendation, we should probably specifically address the cancer case report as one and a recommendation for the cancer pathology report as two.
Yeah. Okay.
I agree. And I was thinking that do we want to move forward on the cancer pathology report using exclusively FHIR? And how do we feel about NACER's work? And because that's still focused on V2 and CDA.
Yeah, and so taking the pathology report on the side, because I don't believe there is a current CDA in play. There is it's focusing on FHIR right now. Just the cancer registry one is that there is a CDA version and there's a FHIR version. And the intent of the comment and discussion that we had was along the lines of let's not require a switch over to FHIR through this rule at this point in time, so that we have the ability to progress and advance the pace of adopting the CDA based as well, as opposed to stopping that effectively as we're just about getting steam there. But still allow somebody that wants to start with FHIR, let them do that. But let's not disable CDA.
Yeah.
Well, there is a V2 guide for pathology reporting that was revised in March 2024.
Yeah, I was only talking about the cancer registry, not the pathology.
Okay, so let's separate out the cancer pathology lab components versus the case reporting components. But the this is a question for the ONC or Acela staff. Did the cancer program area folks who don't have access to the spreadsheet, did they send in a final any final recommendations about what the current release that should be referenced is?
Okay, so this is Jeff. I think as far as what we can reference, what we can adopt is really only what we've proposed. So I don't have any other information on whether there's newer versions or when those might be valided.
However, well, I think they were already valided and released. Jim, you have from Do you have any updates from your CDC colleagues, or can you get back to us to make sure that?
Yeah. I guess the question, I'm glad you brought it up with Jeff on the phone here, because Jeff, the question is, I guess, on the one hand, we can't include anything that goes beyond the NPRM that's stated in it, correct? And Brian had mentioned something earlier in the call about if there's a preponderance of feedback, are we still bound to not add anything new, even if there's an overwhelming push for something that's not in the NPRM?
Jeff, I can totally concur that if it hasn't even been balloted yet, that makes sense. But ones that have already gone to ballot, they were just in, you know, March or May after the proposed rule was drafted. It seems like there's a potential wiggle room there.
Yeah, and we just did.
Yeah, I think that. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Hans.
We made the comment already in LRI under ELR to suggest to use version 5, which was published after the rule went through its process. But that's now the most current one published. So I think it's a fair comment whether ONC can honor it or not. I think that would be up to ONC. But if we feel that that is the better reason, we've done it in the past.
Yep.
2 and 2.1. So I think it's fair comment.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. That's exactly right, Hans. I that's what I was going to say is, you know, you should put into your recommendations exactly what you think. And then, you know, we'll do what we can on the back end. And that'll be a discussion, you know, that we'll have internally.
And I guess the other end is that it could always go, and I don't know if it's worth putting in recommendation language. If it can't be included here, then it should be considered for SBAP.
Yeah. Well, what's Jim, back to you. Not asking for you to make any recommendations, but just factually report from the program area. What is the current IG that the program area is building towards, and that their Cancer Registry Plus software is supporting?
Okay, perfect.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Absolutely. For those who don't know, because I'm with the federal government, the HHS, I also am bound not to opine during the NPRM. That's why I'm staying quiet, but I will get back to you on that.
All right. So it looks like we can Hans and Ike, can we turn the first? I like your suggestion that we make it really clear the distinction between the case report and the pathology report. So they're not inadvertently considered an or, but they should be a yes and.
And two different IGs apply.
Yeah.
Or at least two IGs apply. Depends if you're doing CDA and fire, or just fire, or just CDA.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be clear, in the actual rule language, in the end of the document, it's very clear that it's optional between the two cancer registries, CDA and fire, with some timelines in there, but the cancer pathology is a required. So it's in the actual rule language, both there is no doubt about you have to have a cancer registry and you have to have a pathology.
Okay.
But we should not introduce here, there's no need to introduce here something to the contrary that would make it an or. So we want to make sure we don't do that.
Good. All right. Can we turn Transmittal later, cancer case. Yeah. Okay. Can we turn any of this green or do we need to come back to it?
Probably clean up and come back.
Okay. Let's scroll to the next one, F5. ECR.
Yeah, so we went through and we updated based on the feedback from the last call to make the language a little bit more targeted and directed. The red is the changes. So Steve, Aaron, and I worked on this, and Jillian. And so kind of with the first one, I think the one that needs a little bit more revision is 4. But any thoughts on that? So essentially our recommendations for this are to kind of persist the choice of CDA or fire for a little longer for number one.
Sounds good. Let's turn number one green. This is just a wordsmithing thing we can clean up later, but do we need to repeat the HL7 fire in front of the RRIG? Or is it, it's...
Probably, yes. I can take that as an item to add in.
Yeah. Since we talk about CDA in between the two, I don't want people to think that... Or is there a CDA RR and a fire RR? We need to we're not getting them commingled.
Yeah, but it's not, I mean, there's a response through fire, but it's not really an RR. It's kind of incorporated into the transaction.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's good to go, but I just want to make sure we don't confuse people.
So that's one of the other parts that's just confusing is that it's a pair. The content is the same, but it's not an RR separate message. It's just part of the fire transaction.
Yeah.
Or another way is that in CDA, there was an option to have them in two different documents described, and in fire, everything is defined in one IG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes it easier.
Okay. Number two. Thanks for numbering these, Joel. It makes it a lot easier.
Good. And sorry, I realized I didn't put my name on it. It was a group effort. And so number two is just, this one doesn't really, I guess I wordsmithed it a little bit, but just suggesting that HTI2 should indicate that whatever the EICR is sent, the same format would be returned, fire or CDA. Mm-hmm. This just being consistent with HTI1, since we are recommending persisting fire and CDA.
Okay. Does this shouldn't affect the change, but an intermediary like APHL could, if a state agency can only do one and not the other, you can still handle both.
Yes.
You'd be able to be compliant with HTI1 and send back.
Yes. We're actively implementing the transforms for the PHAs, but regardless of them sending of the healthcare organization, the EHR, sending fire or CDA, we could return whichever now.
The compliant one. Okay, good. Yeah. So turn two green. All right, and then you did some.
So I just added this is.
Point and SNOMED. Okay.
Yeah, just an example to make it more clear. I think those heavily involved with ECR would understand that example, but essentially, the laboratory information, if it's received from kind of a system outside the EHR, should persist kind of standardized codes when returning the data. So
this is where, especially as we are onboarding case reports from providers far afield of our local jurisdictions, this is going to be incredibly important that we, that people are consistently using SNOMED and LOINC and not local codes, because there'll be no way for Washington to resolve a local code from a hospital in Florida that we've never seen before.
Right. And this is one of those paragraphs that needs to sync up with the same kind of language about wherever the data is coming from.
Yeah.
Okay. So I super appreciate that. And after onboarding a TEFCA mediated ECR, we know very well that sometimes hospitals that are more aligned with another state don't see eye to eye with our requirements.
And we also included ask it order entry as a specific call out as needing to be supported.
And race and ethnicity requirements, but I'm not going to wordsmith those in here. Okay, so let's turn that green.
Then four, I think, needs a little bit refining still, just to make it more clear what we're pushing at, and I can try and get to that ASAP. Brian, when do you need this by? I know next week we're meeting with the larger.
A solid team. When did we commit to sharing the documents with the ball?
Yeah, this is Seth. We were planning to share them on Friday morning this week.
Okay. So
the close of business Thursday, I would say.
Thursday be the probably more.
Wednesday
can be better, so that you've got some time.
Joel, I made a little bit of edit in four earlier today.
Oh, you did? Okay. Well, do we want to? I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. Maybe we can circulate offline, and I can try and make sure that kind of Aaron, Jillian, Steve, are all kind of looped in, and we all agree. I don't think it looks bad, but there might be some other considerations we want to keep in here.
I know you've got other groups to support on Thursday, but is there a possibility we could reconvene on Thursday to finalize?
I am at an in person.
Okay. So
I'm in DC traveling. Yeah,
okay. We'll try to do it
online.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Just a general comment, Brian. When we're saying public health agencies, let's try to standardize on stilts throughout. If we're looking at stakeholders and participation, that's kind of a note for the editors, just for consistency, so that we're hitting everybody. And it's not exclusive to CDC, but we're really getting the stilt participation in there.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. That's on me.
Yeah. And in some cases, it's F stilt. There's for the survey reporting, the recipient isn't the stilt, it's the
federal agency. Yeah.
All right. So we'll not turn for green until you've had a chance to double check. Let us know when that's resolved. If you can reply all to the members of the task force.
Great. This one I just added in DOD and the VA.
Perfect. And then, are there any other federal agencies?
It says and others.
And others, okay.
Yeah.
Should that comment be reflected elsewhere as well?
I think
or maybe getting... as a summary statement.
I think Aaron said this is included in several others. Oh, you're saying the updates to include DoD and.
Yeah, I think it's a.
It should be consistent, I would think.
Yeah, and it's one that. It's just problematic in that HHS. I mean, one good thing is that with ASTP's elevation to being an assistant secretary, they now have a lot more purview over other HHS branches, but they still don't have any authority over DOJ, DOD, and VA. So we're asking them to coordinate, but they can't force.
And do we need to mention?
Sure.
Do we need to mention resources for states and locals here too? And do we need to classify a little bit necessary technology and policy improvements, or what kind of?
I think that's covered. It says all parties.
Yeah, I think we make.
It says federal agencies.
We could say all parties, including STLT.
It's right, but right now it says federal agencies, not anything at the state or local level.
Yeah, let's add STLT after all parties, including STLTs. So, to ensure that all parties affected.
So and there's
right
a word
before, federal. Right in front of by.
And there's a word
number
federal.
Five. First line of number five, after the word affected.
I think we should also include intermediaries. I know that's a bio statement, but.
That's a good idea.
Aims
intermediaries or... and STLTs.
Designated intermediaries.
Yeah.
We're wordsmithing.
I know. But we need, as a note, we need to lose the word federal.
Jillian keeping us on track. Thanks, Jillian.
All right. Turn that green and let's go to the last. Number six.
Lose federal.
I don't know if we should lose federal. I think ASTP.
Again, from a wordsmithing standpoint, just to clarify that other intermediaries are not federal or stilts are not federal.
No, but they're ensuring that all parties affected, but, including those.
But the resources are going to need to come from the federal agencies. And I would add one more federal agency instead of just assuming it's under the others, DHS.
Okay, I had read it differently earlier, that looking at the federal agencies needed resources to implement, not the federal agencies were giving resources to others to implement. So that's an important clarification. Thank you.
Can I just make note of Noam's comment in the chat, Indian Health Services?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Although they're not a federal agency. But
they are. They are.
Oh, they are. Oh, you're right. Oh, okay.
And tribes are included in
the boards. It's okay. The tribal health boards that aren't federal that... But they would be included under STILT.
Yeah, they still use the federal system with connection. So
some do.
Yes.
Okay.
Is the language correct so far that non-federal designated intermediaries in STILTs?
I think I'm gonna disagree with removing the word federal that Ike suggested, and I think this reads well as it is. Let's turn it. It is green. Let's move on.
I agree with the way that's written right now. I misread it.
Okay. Just put dollar signs in behind. Instead of the lowercase s at the end of STILTS, we'll use a dollar sign. Just kidding. Number six, I'm afraid to open it up, but.
So I think this one, I mean, the main additions from what were there is kind of persisting the choice of fire or CDA, and then really driving the point home at the end that this retesting towards the transition, like post-transition to fire, will slow the ability to turn off manual reporting and persist that burden of manual reporting.
Right.
And yeah.
So I'm going to ask, I feel like a repetitious question. And in addition to Joel perking up your ears, if Jim Gerges can tune in. Is Jim still on?
Yeah. Yes.
Is the release 3.1 and release 2.1.1 the correct version? Are those what are referenced in the notice of proposed rulemaking, or is this another instance, Joel, where we need to get the user community to all chime in with the same release?
So I believe 3.1 and 2.1.1 are referenced in HTI1.
Okay.
And those are the kind of correct. Right now, everything's 1.1. CDA are 1.1.
So this is improving, and there haven't been any corrections or modifications since those.
I guess there was the errata last week too, 3.1 and 1.1. But maybe we don't include that.
It's too new.
Yeah.
Well, we make one thing that I think we can make as a blanket statement across all of our transmittal is that to the best of certification program's capability, people who voluntarily go beyond the current standard don't get penalized for being compliant with corrections.
That's fair. Yeah.
There is a note there is that from a certified software perspective, it has to be for us recognized in either the rule or an ASVAB. Otherwise, it can get problematic. So, you could ask, but that's I'm not sure whether it's going to help, because it really needs to get into ASVAB then. And there is still time between now and then. Just from past experience, we've had, for example, fire US core 3.1.1 was in the rules, and then fairly quickly thereafter, based on feedback and content, there was a fire US core 4. Always get confused, but it's 1.0 or 00 whatever, but there was a next version that got into ASVAB very quickly to allow for being able to utilize the any kind of error corrections, as well as other things that needed to happen. So, but we look at ASVAB to be there. If it's not, we cannot veer from it unless the standard is recommended or optional.
Yeah, and I think there's a nuanced difference with, you know, minute corrections that make some improvements versus, like, there was a notice of proposed rulemaking that referenced the wrong one entirely, and it would have been catastrophic if it didn't get corrected in the final. So hopefully this is one of those cases where the errata or the dot version is only slightly better. Okay. Hans.
Yeah, I just want to comment that in this one, in 6, frequently I'm suggesting that not to reference EHR vendors, but rather HIT. But in this particular case, just want to make sure is that, as far as I know, there's nobody but EHRs that would submit e-cases.
Okay. Did something strange just happened on my screen, that things we'd previously turned green went back to black and red? Is everybody seeing that?
I'm having the same issue. I'm also having some network issues, so I'm going to refresh the page really quick and see if that fixes it.
I'm seeing it too.
That would have happened if somebody else has the document open and rewrote
Oh no.
Yeah, we can. You can only have one person doing editing, and everybody else views in a cell. Otherwise, it might choke.
Okay. Hopefully, the wonderful wordsmithing we did is in somebody cached in somebody's brain, so we can redo it.
And Brian, while we are refreshing screens, I noticed that row two. That we skipped that. So we went row by row, but two. Oh.
There was an overall. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll come back to that. Yeah. We still have a half an hour to get through 14 of these. So we're going to have to go faster. We're. What's dear, and there's no control Z on a Google sheet, is there?
I mean, control C copy.
Is somebody else in the spreadsheet?
I am in the spreadsheet, but I'm only viewing.
Me okay. too.
Nobody's actively editing. I don't see any. Hover.
I'm not in the spreadsheet at all because I've made a mistake once on that one and decided that having it open, inadvertently hitting a button and redoing work is no fun.
All right. Eli, why don't you and I, after we've finished, go in the hot wash, we can try to reconstruct the additions we made of to number five. And did we make any other substantial changes?
This is recorded, so
we can go back and
you can at least hear.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, let's move on.
Actually, if it's video recorded, you can see it too. The other thing that may be helpful, Excel folks, is once in a while just take a quick screenshot. Of your thing, and that way you can have that as a quick reference.
I'm having flashbacks to losing we lost some of our edits when we did the public health task force. Jillian, hopefully you're not having PSDD. All right, next is six. All right. So this is the NHSN antimicrobial resistance so I think this is another one where at the 11th hour, the CDC program area mentioned that they had put were either had just balloted or a revision was in the process of going through an R4. They want to start using R4 in 2025. But what's in the notice of proposed rulemaking is release three. So one of the things that we'll have to determine is if the improvements are substantial and if the EHR community wants to do one versus the other. Is EHRA weighed in on this, Hans?
Yeah, it's a topic that we're looking at, and the text that you see will be reflective of that. So from there, we can obviously modify, correct, whatever. But that's the perspective that we currently have within EHRA. The CMS, we started to get with QRDA reporting on a cadence on what's in regulations and what's going in ASFAP, and trying to keep them aligned because CMS has annual updates. So it's always interesting how it goes. Here we're suggesting that we get ONC, and in this case CDC and HSN in line in that way as well, and arrive on a cadence so it becomes more predictable in that regard. Question is, what's the right first step to get there?
And I'm not even sure if SVAP is, can we use SVAP as the...
As soon as that there is the guide that is at hand, or the standard at hand is in the regulation, ASVAB can be applied. So so ASVAB you can see for Fire US Core, because Fire US Core is named in a regulation. If the standard is not yet named in any way in a rule published, then ASVAB cannot introduce it. But ASVAB can over time evolve to the next version until the next regulation sets the next lowest bar.
Right. And is, yeah, in the international, in the interoperable standards advisory, the ISA, similarly, or even more flexibly, there could be references to things in there that aren't at all in a regulation.
Correct. Yeah, ISA is quote unquote a library of everything that's out there that could be considered for some purpose, which is not the same as it's in regulation. It doesn't have that restriction.
Yeah. But to misappropriate Jacksboro, it's a guideline.
You know, sometimes we consider it a library.
Yeah. Sometimes a library with competing standards. All right. So,
can I just say on this AMR issue? Yeah. This is a clinically important issue. There's actually a United Nations event in September making this a worldwide issue. So anything we can align with the latest version would be important from a public health perspective.
Jim, can you factually report back what the program area's sense of urgency is for release four? Is that in response to international pressures or regulations, and if I remember right from their presentation, they said they had done a one or two hospital test implementation of the new release. Just sure. Want to make sure that went well.
Yeah, I can get more info on that. Urgency of R4 and what's driving.
And part of the context is then the target date on the provider side is January 2027, January 1 or 31st of December 2026. I'm not sure which one of the two it is. But that's the target line to have it implemented. So would everybody be ready by that time? If you go, and the thought behind, and notwithstanding the comments that were just made, just to clarify the context, that three was suggested to do that and then use ASVAB to get to four, is that currently it is partly R3 and partly R1 that's being used. So step one is get everything on R3, not a split between R3 and R1, and then go up to R4. Yeah. That was the thought behind it, but that's for context only, as to why EHRA was thinking that direction. If there are other arguments that would push it stronger in R4, would be interested to, and we that should be then considered.
Thank
you. Okay. So can we turn any of that green? Any opposed? So it's turn from recommend on green. And maybe have turn Ike plus one black so Steve Eichner doesn't become part of the final rule. Thanks so much. Jim, if you can get back to us, and if any factual information about what's happening internationally with the antimicrobial resistance efforts, Lee, if there's something about that, is that a WHO activity, I presume?
It's both WHO. I think, Jim, you're going to be in New York for the UN General Assembly call. At least that's what I've been told.
Yeah, but you guys are wanting me to find out the context for what was driving R4 and whether the timing of HTI2 compromises anything. I can get back to you.
Yeah, and if there's any international regulation requirement that has different target dates. That does explain perhaps why CDC's NHSN was being much more aggressive than I on their timing. Okay.
Next. Yes, it's, believe it or not, it's 2028 is the 100th anniversary of Fleming's discovery.
Wow.
So that's what's going on.
Wow. Okay. Next is another NHSN activity, the healthcare surveys. This one doesn't impact states or stilts as much. It's much more of a federal survey. So I'm a little bit neutral on my proposed language here. So starting with we recommend, what I suggested is that we do recommend both, supporting both for this time period of the CDA-based survey report and the new FHIR IG. And again, Jim, just clarification, I searched my email. I don't have anything in mind recommending a more with the exact reference, but if we could expand that middle column I a little bit, I think there's some notes in there that were taken during the presentation from NHSN. Yeah, so it was a 1.0.1 that they have, that's gotten through ballot, but wasn't mentioned in the notice of proposed rulemaking. Is that right? Or no, it is in the rulemaking. Okay. 3.1 for the CDA and 1.0.1 for the FHIR. So I think this one, if we can just confirm with certainty from the program area, Jim, that we've got the right standard referenced, I think we're fully supportive. Should we go ahead and turn this green?
question. There's an end in the ret text, and there's an or in the motion notes in I. So I think.
Yeah, so I guess it should be or. You don't need to. A given certification doesn't need to support both. There's one or the other. I think they're.
So the HIT can select with one, and we're comfortable that, and I think in this case it is that CDC will be able to continue to receive CDA. There's no cutoff here.
Yeah.
For some period of time, but not in the rule.
And if it turns out that there isn't a newer IG in the works, we can you could turn that sentence black. But Jim, if you can confirm, I remember I may be confounding the antimicrobial resistance and the survey work. We covered them in the same session. Oh.
I think it's my network. I'm going to connect to my hotspot real quick.
Okay.
So I might drop off.
All right. Yeah, it just turned red again. Okay. So we have 15 minutes left. I'm wondering if can people continue on for an extra period of time, or do people have to drop off at the hour?
I have some flexibility.
Yeah, Brian, this is Seth. We'll need to close the meeting at the scheduled time.
Okay. Do we need to do public comment at 10 minutes?
Yes, we do. We can do public comment, but we can turn back with any remaining time until 1 o'clock.
All right. I'd hope to at least get through the into the tens. Let's see.
Are you able to see my screen? Is that working?
We're back to. I'm seeing the red text, and it still says and. So that needs to be changed to or. Oh wait, yeah. What is it? Perfect. So, Jim, if you can confirm and get back to us. Thank you. It's great to have a liaison from the CDC on. Shall we move on to try to get through 8? And then in 3 minutes, and then open up to public comment, come back. Ike, were you drafting these?
Yes, I was. So the issue is that G10 and G20 are scoped to USCDI and USCDI plus public health up to a point. But if all data points that are required in the HL7 guide go beyond that, there's a problem in implementation.
Are you saying that what's referenced here in the vital records, birth and fetal death reporting may conflict with G10?
It may go beyond what's included in the USCDI and the public health USCDI plus. So it's misaligned.
And So STU 1.1 needs to be modified to come into alignment.
Yeah, or USCDI plus needs to be USCDI needs to be modified.
Is that taking into account just, I think the program area vital records mentioned that although they're referencing this STU, what they intend to certify is only the traditional birth reporting, not fetal death. Is it the fetal death that's the conflict?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. That's problematic.
The other problem, the other concept for you.
Yeah, it depends a little bit on which direction we're looking. Generally, USCDI, USCDI Plus, G10 do not reflect all the data that we communicate in case reporting, lab reporting, whatever, all kinds of things. The specific implementation guides cover all the data that's relevant for that. So in itself, I'm not convinced that it's a problem that birth and fetal death reporting data in the guide is not present in G10, G20, or USCDI, because the implementation would focus on the data that's relevant for that report. So in that direction, I'm not convinced there is a problem per se. The other direction, there is actually not a problem, is that on the question, should we include any data from birth and death reporting, fetal birth and death reporting, into G10 and G20. The concern there is that if we do that, G10 and G20 are already pretty large. Now they get larger with data that certain HIT cannot certify against because they carry that data. So we have to be very careful, I think, much more in the other direction to suggest that everything that is not in G10 or G20 that is in the birth reporting and birth and death reporting in this guide, when it ends up there, actually we have a bigger problem because that would mean that less HIT will be able to certify against it, the less they create capabilities that they don't need. I think that's the bigger issue. We have seen implementation guides and standards being used for specific use cases that are not fully representative in G10 and G20. And generally that's okay. The other direction is a problem.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I think that this is something that we're going to be challenged with again and again, is that having specific IGs for public health use cases as opposed to a generic fire API capability using USCDI is going to always be a little bit at odds with each other, but perhaps we need to get into a realm where we're creating public health profiles that specify how those G20 APIs are specifically constrained to be in compliance with public health's needs.
And the question that still then remains, not depending on context, the system, et cetera, G10, G20, as they currently are evolving, are getting increasingly too big for all certified HRT to be able to manage data. Just not relevant, not appropriate.
Yeah, more specifically, Hans. So just to elaborate on your point, that the IDs are supporting multiple use cases, where if you're looking at a specialty EHR, specialty HIT, you're not going to be supporting all of the use cases by nature of the user of the system. But right, in order to be certified, you have to get the entire truck. You can't just get the certification still to what it comes down to.
So I'm going to pause us for a second. Seth, if you can open things up to public comment, and then
all right, so we're going to move to public comment at this point. So if you are participating by Zoom today, you can raise your hand through the Zoom feature at the bottom of your screen. And if you are participating by phone only today, you can press *9 to raise your hand. And then once called upon, you can press *6 to mute and unmute your line. And while we give folks a few seconds to queue up if we have any public comments, just a reminder that going forward, we'll be pivoting to the full HTI2 proposed task force meeting starting on Tuesday, September 3rd next week. And then we'll be continuing with the full task force through September 5th. The meetings are from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern time for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week. And as a reminder, all high-tech meeting materials can be found on healthit.gov. And let's see, I'm going to check, do we have any public comments on the line?
Okay. No comment. And,
okay, thank you. And we do not have any on the Zoom. So, Brian, I'll turn it back to you.
All right. Let's try to wrap up this one at least. And then can we go back to the spreadsheet? Thanks, Elliot.
We need to go down a bit.
You're zoomed in probably. Like, so we're on row 10, birth reporting. Can we, so you jumped in the discussion here, Ike, of, you know, alignment with G10 and G20. If we turn back to just the recommendations around, the implementation guide, STU 1.1, can we say that
it gets better?
It's better than nothing?
Yeah.
Or yeah, do we need to, is this one where we need to say there may not be enough progress or proving out of this? I think Michigan has done some testing around it and some other states, but a lot of the EHR or the public health vendors for the F28 component are not going to be ready.
Yes, and the other difficulty is that there's still a gap between some jurisdictions and what's actually included in the IG, that there may be states that are collecting more data than what's included or what's supported. So you've got a problem about, yes, you can use certified technology, but certified technology may not be enough in some jurisdictions, and that puts an additional burden on the provider for custom modifications.
Okay.
If they're going to use the FHIR standard, and then the impact, of course, in the CMS reg is that if CMS requires providers to use certified technology to do it, but public health can't support that particular technology, well, I guess we get around that with declaring readiness for that standard, but it gets messy.
So scroll over to the left. Let's see what's in the create provider live birth reporting in accordance with the FHIR IG 1.1.0 STU 1.1. There is no date deadline on this one, as opposed to some of the other ones that had a 2028.
Correct.
So is this really a voluntary signaling and we can be supportive of it? And maybe it'll start to move the needle, Hans, or is this one that we need to say we're not ready yet?
Well, without an action date, I don't think anybody's going to move forward on it.
Right. And I think the challenges are couple-fold. One is that insufficient maturity and operational use to understand, are we ready? This is the first version, where that typically is a little bit more of a challenge than we are on version 5 and we're suggesting to go to version 6. That's a different scenario we're in. So in this case, this is very early on, seems to be too early. There are no dates. And the question that is raised, could this all be obtained through G10 and G20? Our concern is that that might lead to including things in G10 and G20 that are specific to this specialized reporting that can
only, we need a mod. You know, I've always thought that USCDI Plus should be where these kind of modular things get included, not in the core.
I agreed with that. And then we need to figure out how we then manage G20, because currently G20 is a proposed base EHR requirement, which means that any EHR, if it were to be in G20, it would have, every EHR would have to support that, which still goes back to the same issue that we raised before, is that in the other direction than what is currently written down in the cell. Having the guide more than G10, G20 is, from an implementation perspective, not a problem. Having G10 and G or G20 include data that is unique to birth and fetal reporting, that's a problem, because that imposes it on every EHR, if not every HIT that wants to be certified.
Right. So I think we can't really. Well, how do people feel? I'm going to hear from some folks other than Ike and Hans on this.
Happy to work with Ike to come up with a draft. We can go back and forth over the next 1 or 2 days and see where they can find that middle ground on the concern. Okay. Ike, would that work?
Absolutely. I'm free anytime after 1 o'clock Central Time.
All right. And then Naresh, are you able to stay on or meet with me separately to, so I'm not seeing Naresh on anymore. Shoot.
Yeah, so we're
at our time,
so we'll need to adjourn, but we can follow up as needed.
All right. We barely got through half and didn't quite get through half of the ones we needed to get through, Seth.
Yeah, so we can chat in the debrief and kind of come up with a game plan for next week.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you all. I lost my hat and I'm rubbing my forehead in ponderance of how we're going to get this accomplished. But I really appreciate everybody sticking through this.
Take care. Thank you, Brian.